You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 154 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is a Thursday evening. It's been a little bit since we've come back on the podcast. It's because I was traveling and all that fun stuff, but here to rectify that and bring you some fresh Atlanta Braves content is myself and the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? We got 3 weeks to opening day, which is kind of crazy at this point.
Yeah, we're getting there. For sure. It's been weird. I've watched a little bit of baseball. Not a ton, just because it happens during the day and I'm at work. But I have monitored a little bit and followed, of course, what's going on. And not going to do too much on spring results at this point. It's still pretty early and not a ton has happened that's like turned my head too much. But a couple of things to hit on here. We're going to end with a bullpen preview of sorts. The next three or four podcasts, we're going to do a preview of some part of the roster a little bit more in depth. We've been doing a little bit of that throughout the offseason, obviously. But we're getting down to brass tacks here. So it's time to get a little bit deeper. And we'll touch on the bullpen a little bit later. But I guess the lead story this week was not really Braves related. At least I say this week, it's been like 8 or 9 days since I've done a podcast. But Bryce Harper signed, and we knew he was going to do that. We knew it probably wasn't going to be in Atlanta. But if you're a Braves fan, you can't like seeing Bryce Harper go to Philadelphia. So what was your reaction when that news broke? And it was not like fresh necessarily right now, because it's been a little bit here, but it definitely still impacts the Braves.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody pointed out, you know, of all the locations or all the places that Bryce could go, obviously you wanted him out of the East after doing a lot of good things with the Nationals the last 7 years. The fact that the Phillies add him at this point in the offseason, I think you can make a decent argument that they're now the favorites in the East, though I maintain that a lot of it's going to be based on health, and all four of the National League East contenders have some serious questions, and all of them have really high upsides, but I could also talk myself into any four of them struggling if a few things don't go right. So not ideal that he's going to be in the East for another 13 years, which is just nuts. No opt-outs, which was supposedly a big thing for him, but he's going to be there until, what's that, like 2032 or something like that?
Which is just outrageous.
That's just, that's hard to fathom. I mean, 2032, he's going to be playing in Philly. I actually thought for their perspective, based on the money, is not absurd just because it's so spread out that, you know, I think it's like $26 million the next like 10 years, and then the final 3 years it goes down to $22 million, which if you assume that salaries are going to keep escalating, that you know, $22 million in the year 2030 probably won't be like that absurd when you have guys now getting $30, $35 million a year. So not ideal. I was hoping he would go to LA or San Diego or San Francisco, just anywhere that wasn't Philly, because they certainly have a loaded lineup now. But, you know, it is what it is, and they're going to have to go overcome it.
For sure. And we're not going to do necessarily like all the predictions right now. We still have a couple of weeks, as you mentioned, but the over under stuff changed a little bit with Harper going to Philadelphia. The Nats are now, I guess, not seen as a unilateral favorite. For the most part, the Nats were like considered to be the favorite in terms of betting markets. Now it's Philly in some ways. You know, Philly has the highest over under according to some of the offshore sites. The Nats are right behind them. Philly about 89.5 or so, Nats at 88.5 or so, and then the Braves and Mets somewhere in the 85, 86 range, depending on where you want to look. Does this change the balance of power for you? I think people have sort of overreacted in some ways to the Nats losing Harper, because he was never going to go back to the Nats. At least in my opinion, that was not really going to be a thing that happened. So I was kind of planning about him not being there. I think Vegas was as well. and they're still good. The Nats are still very, very talented. They added a lot of interesting pieces, and they have great pitching, of course. And now, but of course, Philly gets Bryce Harper. So quickly, without having, I'm not going to hold you to this, but how much does Harper going to Philly actually help to sort of swing your thoughts on the NL East right now?
It obviously helps. I still think I'm going to get roasted for this, but I still think if you held a gun to my head tonight, I think I would still pick the Nationals to win the East. And maybe it's, and again, I think on paper 1 through 25, the Nats probably have the best, roster. But as we've said, you know, last year they had the best roster on paper, and they were 10 games worse than the Braves. And they've had one of the best rosters in all of baseball the last half decade, and they haven't won a playoff series yet. So it obviously helps the Phillies. He's going to, I mean, in that ballpark, especially the right field, you don't have to hit a ball a whole far, very far to get it out. And I think he's just going to crush it there. They've improved their defense. The one thing for me with the Phillies is their starting rotation after Aaron Nola. You just don't know what you're going to get. Jake Arrieta was up and down all last year. Nick Pivetta has shown he has the potential to do some things, but just wasn't great last year, though there is a chance he regresses positively. And then it just kind of comes down to if other guys can stay healthy. Vince Velasquez has been decent when healthy. Same for Zach Eflin, though those guys aren't exactly proven stars by any means. So I think all the teams in the East have fairly big question marks and potential holes if things don't fall right. And if I had to pick today, I think I would still take Washington. And then, at least not to me on paper, I think the Braves, Phillies, and Mets are all right there as far as being the second best, at least from a paper perspective.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in general on all of that. I said this, I think, with Zach last week. If you missed that podcast, go back and listen to it and subscribe and all that fun stuff. But I know I tweeted this out at some point in time. No order of the top four would like floor me right now. I mean, that's not really a hot take to say, but I think the top four, I do think that Washington and Philly are more talented than Atlanta and New York, if you put a gun to my head, as you kind of mentioned before. But no order would surprise me. You know, if the Braves finished first, I wouldn't be surprised. If the Braves finished fourth, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, would I predict them to win the division right now? No, I wouldn't. But obviously, we didn't last year. No one did last year. And I think they're obviously in a better position to start this year, expectations-wise, than they were last year. So it's all on the table. I don't think it really changes that much anyway. But considering I kind of assume that Bryce is going to be leaving Washington, and that doesn't really affect them, and Philly, of course, adding a potential MVP candidate makes them better. So all that to say, there you go on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. There's you could argue any of the four teams to win the division, and I really don't think you can argue it. I mean, if the Mets get full, healthy, good seasons out of their top four starters with as good
it's
as Julio was last year and DeGrom, and it is. You know, you could talk me into a situation where they finish below 500 because DeGrom and Syndergaard get hurt and Wheeler doesn't continue what he did in the second half of last year. Steven Matz is still kind of the same guy instead of taking a step forward. You could also say, no, they're all going to have great years, and with that improved lineup and bullpen, you know, they're going to win upwards of 90 games. I think you can pretty easily talk yourself in or out of any team in the division and go from there.
For sure. And we'll do, at some point, we're going to do some final predictions, but we're going to hold off because rosters could still change, if nothing else, between now and opening day. Okay. Moving on. Speaking of rosters, I guess we should mention this now. Mark Bowman, good friend of the program, and obviously been on the beat for a long time, put out a projected 25-man roster on Thursday that turned some heads in one particular way. And that was that he was saying that Mike Foltynewicz may not be ready for opening day. And as a result of that, and we'll touch on all the injuries here in a second, but as a result of Folty's potential absence at the beginning of the season, they could carry three catchers and go with Alex Jackson as the third catcher slash pinch hitter. And I think part of the wording Bowman used was to allow Brian Snicker to pinch hit with either McCann or Flowers, which of course makes us crazy because that does not, you can do that anyway. You don't have to have three catchers. But anyway, what'd you make of that? And Jackson's had some interesting stuff in spring. I think it's a little bit early, at least in my mind, to have him on the roster to open the season, though. So that at least surprised me a little bit, even if somebody has to take that roster spot, if it's not Folty.
Yeah, I mean, good for Alex Jackson, man. I mean, I remember seeing maybe 6 months to a year ago that scouts were kind of down on him and didn't really see him as a major leaguer. And to all his credit, every report out of this spring is that he's really worked on his body to get in better shape. He's more nimble than he was. He's improved as a receiver behind the plate. you know, for the longest time it was, well, his bat is going to play, but you know, he's just not going to be a good enough catcher to be a regular major leaguer. And I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be that, but the fact that he's put himself in the conversation, I think it was Brian Snicker who said a day or two ago, that Jackson is probably the most improved player in camp, from this time a year ago. So good for him. Bowman kind of mentioned in his article that it's really more a product of just he allows the roster to have some flexibility. And frankly, he's probably one of the better hitting options of all your on your 40-man roster right now. He's already on the 40-man roster, so it's not like you would have to boot somebody just for a couple of days while Folty gets right. Because assuming Folty's elbow isn't barking, it does sound like he might be able to debut in that home series against the Cubs or even against the Marlins that second weekend of the year. So it kind of makes sense when you think about it a little bit more. When I saw the name, I did a double take and thought it might be a typo or something like that. But, good for Alex, and hopefully he's able to do a few things, even if it is a limited stint in Atlanta.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. And I think Bowman would even say that it's a guess. It's not a, it's still very, very early. A lot can change, but that did turn some heads. We should talk about the injury stuff / availability stuff that's happened over the last week and a half or so. Josh Donaldson has not appeared yet. I'm not sure that's really injury related. They're being very, very careful with him. He's now scheduled as of this recording on Thursday night to debut on Friday. And he told Mark Bowman that he's feeling very confident right now. And Donaldson said, and I quote, "If the season were to start in a week or two, my body would be feeling very good to where I could just go out there and there won't be any questions," end quote. So that's pretty optimistic. With that said, they pushed it back a couple times now, which is not perfect. I mean, I'm not really worried, I wouldn't say, but every time there's like a definitive timetable-ish, it gets pushed back. So if he plays Friday, no one's going to care. But let's just start with Donaldson. Does any of this worry you at all, or is it just like they're just being really careful?
I think, obviously, I would prefer if he was out there and he's hit 5 homers already and he's been playing since the very first day. But no, I mean, this is a guy, he's in his early 30s. I think he said this is his 10th spring training at the major league level now. He's somebody, and I think all veterans like him and Freeman and Markakis and, you know, on and on, those guys really need, historically they say they need about 2.5 or 3 weeks of time to really get ready for the regular season. It's such a grind. I'm fine with it. Sure, I wish he was playing every day right now, but he's just so important to this year's team. The idea of losing him to an injury, an unnecessary injury at that, on March 7th or whatever today is, when there's still 3 full weeks to go before opening day, would be a real blow to this team. So I'd much rather him. And it's not like, this, but just because he's not playing in games doesn't mean he's sitting around his hotel room all day. He's getting yes. swings in the cage. He's playing in the backfields. He's getting his swings. He's getting his work in. He's getting his cardio in and all that good stuff. So not necessarily a concern. If for some reason he's scratched again tomorrow, I'll be a little more worried, but he does sound like it's all systems go and he should be ready to go.
Yep, and there's every reason to believe that they'll take their time, and they should. You know, Donaldson's not the youngest guy, but he isn't that old. I mean, he has the injury stuff recently, and we'll keep an eye on that. And it helps to have Yoan Camargo, because that's a guy who could play there without any issue whatsoever. If Donaldson needs to have a day off or two, especially early in the season when it's still cold and all that fun stuff, we will definitely monitor him very closely, because when he's playing, he's very good. By the way, we got a lot of questions on the podcast about like lineup construction and the offense and stuff like that. We're going to hold those for the lineup preview of some sort. So if you are asking stuff, our apologies on that. But we're going to focus on pitching for the most part today. I want to say that now, so we're talking about Donaldson, because the rest of these guys, honestly, other than Dansby, everything else that's a question mark, and then the bullpen preview is all pitching. So we're definitely going to get there, I promise you. But for now, just pitching stuff. I guess the last hitting guy is Swanson, who's now played and without incident, no pain for him. He got a late start as well. He had a nice hit in his first game when he played earlier this week, and Dansby seems to be okay. Any worry spot there for you? Obviously, it's kind of a big year for Dansby in a lot of ways, so not ideal that he's not going to be, he wasn't 100% from the start of spring training, but he's the same sort of thing where I think if it was important, he would have been playing, but they're just kind of being careful, because I think everybody knows it's kind of a big year for him.
Yeah, absolutely, and anytime you're dealing with, as somebody myself who underwent wrist surgery, it can be a grueling injury, and it can be something that takes a lot of time to fully recover, and I wasn't out there trying to hit 95 mile an hour fastballs for a living, so Yeah, it was good to see. He actually changed. It looks like Dansby has changed his swing a little bit, which is interesting.
I
His
saw,
front
yeah,
leg.
I saw your, I saw your scouting on that when that first happened, and I hadn't seen, him yet, and I was just, my first, I guess my first interaction with Dansby's bat this season was your Twitter feed, which is always fun. I
Yeah,
enjoyed
I was
that.
like, oh, well, I watched, and you notice little things, and I thought, man, he just doesn't look like the same guy. And he has. I mean, maybe he last year, of course, Acuna so notoriously kind of changed and dropped his hands a little bit and tightened things up, and he had the second half of all second halves. And I'm not necessarily saying that Dansby's going to be on an MVP pace in the second like Ronnie was, but he did hit the ball hard 2 times. You're obviously talking extremely small samples, and I'm sure throughout the year he's going to continue to tweak things. But he's always had, when healthy, it always seems like Dansby's been able to hit. Be the guy that people thought he was going to be coming up. It's just a matter of staying healthy, which hasn't been the case through his first 3 years in the majors. So, as you said, a big year for him. I'm optimistic. I actually think he's going to be my pick to break out this year. I think he's going to put together a real nice season. So yeah, it was optimistic at least to see him getting games, and hopefully the new swing helps him, because with his glove, he just has to hit a little bit in order to be a pretty valuable asset for the Braves.
Yeah, that's the big question: is will he be able to hit a little bit? You know, last week Zach was pretty optimistic as well about Dansby's bat and the fact that he battled the injury last year. That could have been a big thing. I tend to agree with both of you on this. I do think that again, though, if he struggles for a couple of months out of the gate, the noise is going to get very loud on Swanson, because I do think we saw last year, even if he's just the guy he was last year, he's a serviceable starter because of his glove at shortstop. But if he doesn't hit, people are going to start whispering, especially with Camargo on the roster and also Albies on the roster, guys who could play shortstop and who have hit a lot more than Swanson has. So, a big year for Dansby. He's still young, so we'll see how he handles that, of course. You know, the two guys, I guess, that were at the top of the rotation by the end of last season, obviously, Fulte, we talked about briefly before, is battling some injury stuff early on. Kevin Gausman had a little bit of a scare with a shoulder thing. He seems to be back on track now as of earlier this week. But that was scary. For there was like a day or two when it was like, by the way, Soroka, Gausman, Folty, everybody's hurt, and it wasn't like they were, none of it
Freed,
was like disaster.
Freed
And
cut
Freed,
his
yeah, Freed had the was it? I guess it wasn't a blister. It was a cut of some sort.
he ripped his pinky finger with his thumbnail, like the guy needs to
Which
go get
that
a
just sounds
manicure or
awful.
something like that.
Yeah.
That's just a freak injury.
Yeah, but I mean, I was just like, that was that situation where it was like, oh, is anyone going to pitch other than Julio Teheran this spring? Any of these worry you at all? You know, Folty is the one where they just cannot afford to be without him. Like, they don't have that number one guy. Even I have my reservations about him as a number one guy in general, but if you take him away, they're in big trouble. So that's the one that I would worry about the most. Even if it's not like a serious injury, I would just worry about that the most. But do you worry about any of these starters? We'll get to the bullpen in a second, but the starters who are banged up, Soroka's shoulder seems to be a little bit less worrisome than it was the first time when the news broke, but still, none of this stuff is ideal.
No, it's not. As much as I'd like to be able to sit in on in the Braves training room and hear what's going on, we just don't know. And hopefully it's more a case of being being cautious, letting these guys get their rest, and making sure they're getting all their work in without pushing them again. We're 3 weeks away from opening day. You have all those built-in off days early in the year that you can use to help limit the need for five starters right out of the gate. So yeah, Kevin Gausman he's the projected starter for Friday, which is encouraging. You hope that he comes out and looks like his normal self, because I think he's a really steady middle of the rotation guy. Pitched pretty well last year, of course, after the trade. So as we said, kind of with Donaldson, yeah, you wish he was out there on the first game of the spring and throwing normally and not in the training room. But ultimately, you give these guys really, for in his case, probably 4 weeks by the time he's really having to make a start in the regular season. You hope that he'll be able to build himself up and be fine.
Yep, that's kind of where I am as well. I want to at least run down those a little bit before we get into the bullpen preview, which we're going to do right now. So, first, some backdrop, big picture, and then we'll sort of drill down a little bit. Bowman is projecting. This is, again, we're using Mark Bowman a lot, but I think he's there and plugged in and all that fun stuff. This is his opening day projected bullpen at this moment. I'm just going to read this to you and see if you disagree. Then we'll drill down from there. It's Aroys Vizcaíno, AJ Minter, Darren O'Day, Dan Winkler, Johnny Venters, Chad Sabaka, Sam Freeman, everybody's favorite Sam Freeman, and Jesse Biddle. No surprises for me, just out of the gate. I think that's probably the group that I would have projected if you told me to pick, what is it, eight guys? That'd probably be the eight that I would have guessed that the combination of Snicker and Anthopoulos would have gone with. But anything that you would change or anything that strike you as odd with those eight?
I don't think so. If you had to ask me today, I think that's probably the same eight I would pick. There's a couple of questions there. You know, you mentioned Dan Winkler has been on the shelf a little bit, battling some elbow discomfort. And he's, of course, a guy who's had some injuries in the past. That's a little bit of a concern. And Chad Sabatka has had a couple of rough outings in a row. I think he's given up runs in three straight appearances.
The one game that I actually watched start to finish this week was the one that I had the recap on for Talking Chop earlier this week, and that was the game that Sabatka just completely melted down, gave up the home run to Aaron Judge, and was just a disaster. And I was like, oh, this is going to be rough. And some of the overreaction was funny because there were people like, well, there goes a closer option. And I'm thinking, wait, was he a closer option? I saw that a couple times. I was like, wait, people were tweeting that at the Talking Chop account, and I'm thinking, if you thought he was a closing option, we have a different issue because he's not a closing option. That's not ever been a thing. But he didn't look good. Let's just say that.
Yeah. and again, you're not going to kick a guy off the team because he had a bad inning against Aaron Judge in the early March. But because he has such a little experience at the major league level, of course, he came on like gangbanger in September and just, you know, never looked back. It does help to have a few options. I mean, Shane Carl was really good for a couple months last year, but wasn't great besides that. You know, Luke Jackson is not anyone's preference to be in the seventh or eighth inning of a close game, but I guess you can do worse if they're the eighth guy out of the bullpen. You know, and you have to just hope again that Vizcaino and Minter are healthy. Minter's another guy who's had some shoulder discomfort, though it sounds like that came from a car crash he was involved in. So
that was bizarre. Let's talk about that for a second. Minter is obviously one of the best relievers on the team. First this breaks as a shoulder injury and everyone panics because shoulder injuries are terrible. No one likes shoulder injuries for pitchers. And then it sort of just casually, like either later that day or the next day, it was like, oh, by the way, he was in a car accident. And that's the reason. I was like, wait, what? Like, I mean, it was a good thing for the Braves, all things considered, the way that it came out. But it was like, why didn't we know this ahead of time? Like, why did we have this whole day of just abject panic that our best left-handed reliever, if you're a Braves fan, is banged up with a shoulder injury? And it's like, oh, by the way, he had a car wreck. No problem. Like, yeah, wait, car wreck in Orlando?
Yeah, a little kind of buried the lead a little bit there on that injury. But hey, you know, what can you do? So
it was hilarious.
Overall, I mean, assuming, you know, the fruit that's still hanging out there is Craig Kimbrell, and who knows where he's going to end up. At some point, he has to sign somewhere. But if,
you say
if
that.
They don't end up, you would think maybe he will hold out until the middle of the year and wait for some team to get desperate. But yeah, I mean, last year, just looking at the Fangraphs page real quick here, Braves relievers were 17th in all of baseball with a 4.15 ERA, which, you know, isn't terrible, but isn't as good as you would want it. From a FIP basis, they were a 3.98, which is a little bit better, more in the top. I think it's like 13th or so in all of baseball. So again, it's not great, and I don't think there's any path for this current group of relievers to be great. I was a little surprised that Bowman, and again, this is just his guess 3 weeks out, but to not have someone like Max Fried, Luis Gajara, one of the young kids, even Tukey, in the bullpen to start the year. Maybe they're going to just kind of see what they have with the other guys because all those kids have options left still. But again, I don't think it's going to be a bad group by any means, but there's certainly it could be improved, I guess we can say.
Yeah, I wasn't that surprised about the lack of the starters maybe masquerading as bullpen guys, only because, you know, until there's more injuries or until there is some weirdness, you know, the guys they have projected here, that Bowman has projected here, I think would all be on the team if anyone, like, unless they just blow up. Like, if Sabatka just continues to blow up, maybe he won't be there. Or if Sam Freeman melts down, maybe he won't be there. But, you know, I think the locks for me, Vizcaino, Minter, O'Day, Venters, Winkler, and I think Biddle, barring just like a complete implosion, are locks. Would you agree with that? Like, barring injury, I think those six guys are probably going to be there. And then you have Freeman and Tsubaka are like the kind of pivot points. And obviously Snicker loves Sam Freeman and everyone knows that. So I think he'll have the benefit of the doubt much, much more than fans want to give him the benefit of the doubt. So, I mean, if you figure eight slots, you probably need some weirdness to get a starter in there, whether it be Tukey or whoever.
That's true.
Just because, you know, that's just kind of the way. I guess my thing is that I'd be surprised if they just planned on coming out of the gate with one of those guys in the bullpen. I guess you need a long man, though, because right now there isn't one on this eight. That's the one big, I guess, semi-weird thing is that there isn't a long man among these eight guys. Like, there are guys who could pitch one or two innings, obviously. You know, Shane Carl, for instance, was sort of a semi-long man at times last year. He's not on the list. Neither was Luke Jackson, but I mean, who's the guy you go to if you need three innings right now? It doesn't really exist.
No, there isn't. And that's kind of what I came back to as well is you know, they had talked about kind of keeping that six-man rotation that they employed at times last year to give Sean Newcomb that extra day. You know, let's say it's Tukey who opens the year in the rotation. You're not going to want Tukey to throw 200 innings in his rookie year. You know, if it's Kyle Wright, if it's Max Fried, whoever it is, it just seems – like it'd be to the Braves' benefit to keep these guys fresh because it's such a long year. So I was a little surprised, but you're right. I mean, if you will need a long man, but maybe early on in the year they figure they won't need it with the days off. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be. And there's also always the chance that they could go out and sign somebody over the next 3 weeks and add someone. Maybe that's partly what they're waiting on to see how these guys fare because, you know, everyone knows there's still not only Kimbrel, but a handful of other competent, you know, decent middle relievers out there, and at this point they'd have to sign for pretty cheap.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's something that I've been sort of waiting on them to sign a reliever, and they just haven't done it. You know, Bowman did reference that, you know, Dan Winkler has to still prove that he's passed, I'm quoting Bowman here, needs to prove that he's passed the elbow discomfort that slowed him down earlier in camp. And and by the way, Bowman says, and actually does not mention any of the long guys or any of the starters. He says that Shane Carl and Luke Jackson are the top candidates if Winkler or Tsubaka wasn't ready to go. So for whatever reason, that seems to be sort of off the table. I'm not really sure why, but we'll see what happens there. But I mean, it's kind of fluid. Bullpens are fluid in general. That's something that it's kind of scary to do this preview first. On one hand, it's the least impactful in some ways, and the guys are just a little bit less famous. There's only one or two big names here. With that said, a lot can change. I think more so than anywhere else on the team, you get a lot more surprises in bullpens in the last 2-3 weeks of spring training, whether it be injury-related or late signings. So we're doing this now. We'll definitely update it if something weird happens. But, you know, these eight guys, it wouldn't be a disaster if you open the season with these eight guys, especially if Minter and Vizcaino are healthy. But at the same time, it's not a strength, in my opinion. I mean, maybe it is for some. Maybe you can close your eyes and see a scenario where it is a strength. But for me, it's not an impressive bullpen.
No, I think in order for it to be a true strength, you would need, well, for one, you need Vizcaino and Minter to be healthy. I think Darren O'Day, obviously, he hasn't thrown his first pitch with the Braves, at least in a regular season game. But he was as good as it gets in the American League East for a couple of years there with the Orioles. If he's able to get back to his old self, you know, and then we know what Johnny Venters can do. Jesse Biddle was really good up until the stretch around last year. Same for Winkler, and guys like Sabatka have the stuff in order to get big leaguers out. So, I mean, it's not like we're looking at this group going, oh God, if we don't have a 5-run lead by the eighth inning, it's probably just not going to happen, or, you know, or the lead isn't safe. But, again, yeah, I was disappointed they didn't add anyone. I know for a fact they have at least kicked the tires on a couple of veterans who have signed lately, but, obviously they just didn't meet the price or the free agent just didn't feel like there was enough innings to go around in Atlanta because of the depth they have, even if it's not super top end depth.
Yeah, and I get it to some degree. And also, you know, something that we have to say, let's just talk about him now. Darren O'Day is the one guy who is new among this group. He was on the team last year, but when the Braves traded for him, he was injured. So it wasn't like he was available. He was around, though. He came in the Gausman trade. He makes a lot of money, so he's going to be around regardless. He's only pitched, I believe, once in spring so far. It didn't go super duper well. But it's a one-game sample for a guy who's 36 years old. So I'm not really worried about Darren O'Day. Just for some context here, as I know Braves fans don't really know a ton about him unless they were really, really closely following things last year. He's been a good pitcher for a long time. You know, he's not the same. You know, if there was like a 5 year stretch where he was like, I guess 4 or 5 year stretch where he was actually pretty dominant, like a sub 2-3 ERA in 4 straight seasons, I think. Since then, he's cooled off and been like a solid, not spectacular kind of pitcher. But you know, he's 36. He's a right-hander. It's just one of those things where he's not going to blow you away, but he would provide some stability if he's the guy that he was before the injury.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he was someone who has kind of a funky, has a little bit of a funky delivery. And again, as I said a little while ago, he's somebody who has been able to get good big leaguers out, especially pitching in that park and against the teams in that division. So he is a little bit under the radar right now. As you said, he's 36. He's been around since like the mid thousands. So this is like his 14th, I think, for just quick counting here, is probably his 14th. Spring training, so I can't imagine he's a guy who needs to go out there and get who needs to get 20 appearances this spring. But I would think, as with the other veterans, he'll really start to play a little bit more, come to games that final like week and a half to get, you know, really get his legs under him for the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm looking at this now. 4 years ago or so, he became sort of a different pitcher. Like, he's become more of a strikeout guy. Like, earlier in his career, and this kind of goes in line with all of baseball, honestly, but he's now struck out the last 4 seasons, and granted, he was hurt for part of last year, of course, but the last 4 years, he's struck out about 11.5 guys per 9 innings with less than 3 walks per 9, so that's obviously a pretty impressive stretch of time, despite the fact that his numbers weren't incredible. You know, 2.8 ERA is still very solid over that 4 year stretch. It's just a question of whether he's the same guy or not. And at the age that he is, you don't know, but he's making more than anybody else in the bullpen. So unless Darren O'Day falls apart, he's going to be on the team, at least for a while. So that's just something to keep in mind there, because
he's probably, now that I do the quick math, he's probably making more money himself than all the other relievers combined.
I mean, it's possible. Well, without doing the math, it's up there.
He's at 9, I think. He's at 9 mil, and Viz is at 5, and I believe Venters is at like 1 million, but everybody else is minimum.
Yeah, I mean, if you took out Vizcaíno, it wouldn't even be close. Would certainly be O'Day over everybody else, but yeah, it'd be close regardless, which kind of says a lot. He isn't going to be the closer. He's definitely going to be a 7th, 8th guy. Even if he's the guy that he was before, he's not going to be in the closing mix. You know, I hate the term closer in general, but I guess we can go there now real quickly. Do you think there's going to be a closer, a single guy in the 9th inning this year, or is it going to be Brian Snicker embracing the newfangled idea to kind of go by committee and go with Minter and Viz and play matchups? Because it's been kind of back and forth at times the last couple of years. They have these two guys who are clearly their two high-leverage pitchers, but, you know, how much do we see one of them? If they're both healthy, is it one guy in the 8th, one guy in the 9th, or is it like, let's see what's going on and play the matchups? Because that's obviously the math thing that you would do, but it's also not the traditional route that you would go.
I would think, and I would also hope, and I truly do think, though, that it will be more of a committee approach in the 9th inning. And why shouldn't it be? I mean, if you're facing, if you're facing a team with 3 really good righties coming up, well, it'd be silly to send Minter out there for the 8th inning. If you want to use O'Day, having that kind of submarine approach from the right side, you would think that would really play to his benefits. So, let me ask you this. So if you had to bet on whether or not a Braves pitcher would have 20 saves next year, would you bet on that or no?
20, yes. I think only because I think they could both get 20. This team's going to be good, but not so good that they're going to blow teams away, you know? Like, it's a scenario where if you told me that one of these guys was in the role all season long, would I project them to have 35 or more saves? I think yes. So, you know, maybe not 35. 35 is kind of aggressive, but even then, like, it wouldn't blow me away if you knew AJ Minter was healthy all season and the closer all season for the Atlanta Braves. I think I'd probably project him for like 38 saves.
Yeah, yeah.
So
just out of sheer opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with, Vizcaíno. I think more of Minter than Vizcaíno. At the same time, Vizcaíno, when he's good, is very good. So if he has it going, then, you know, it's kind of what it is. So, yeah, I think one of them will fall into 20 saves. You're definitely hoping for some health from those two, because I can't imagine anybody else does get to that number unless there's some really weird goings on. But, yeah, 20 is so low that I will say one of them gets there. It might be 22 and 14. It might be 22 and 17. It might be 29 and 12. I don't know. But, I mean, think about the matchups. Matchup-wise, you know, probably you're going to see Vizcaíno get more opportunities. If they just played the platoon split kind of stuff, it'd be Vizcaíno getting more, you would imagine. And you'd see more of Minter in the 8th, etc. But, I don't know. Yeah, 20, I'd say yes. If you said 25, I'd probably say no. So it's
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. It's in that range.
I think Darren O'Day, I mean, again, he's never been a, you know, the most saves he's ever had in his, in a major league season is 6. So I don't think he's necessarily going to be thrown into that role. But when you look at his numbers, and of course, he was on a historically awful team last year in Baltimore. But he did have, you know, he called upon him for 2 saves in his first 20 appearances. And, you know, just to give you an idea of the numbers on O'Day. In 20 innings, he had 27 strikeouts to just 5 walks, an ERA of 3.6, a FIP of 3.46. So, you know, a guy who, and again, facing teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox last year with those insane lineups and pitching in Camden, which is such a hitter-friendly park. I'm with you. I don't think he's somebody who's going to save 25 or 30, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, if Viz needs a night off or if he's hurt. Or if that's the case with Minter, it wouldn't surprise me. And I think the Braves would have some comfort throwing him out there in the 9th inning. It's not like they're going to hand it to, you know, a rookie who's never done it before in his entire life. And you just kind of worry about the moment getting to him.
Yeah, there was a stretch last year when I would have certainly told you that it was going to be Winkler because he was just lights out for a few months. Like, you know, there was a legit buzz for him to make the All-Star team. Like, it was not a
weird
thing.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah.
He had like a 1 ERA for a couple of months. Like, he was legitimately awesome. Then he kind of fell apart a little bit, health-wise, et cetera. And there's some question about that as well. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, for me, you know, Venters, I think, in his role is going to be quite good. Like, you know, Venters, I don't want him facing right-hand pitching, if he can help it. But against lefties, he is awesome. And, by the way, this 8-man group that Bowman is projecting is 4 lefties and 4 righties. And Minter is the only lefty that's not a specialist lefty. I mean, I guess Biddle sort of isn't. It's kind of weird. But he's not someone who you want, like, high leverage. He definitely needs to be your 7th or 8th guy. Like, he's okay, but he's not this great pitcher. Minter is kind of, you know, a dominant end-of-game reliever. But Venters is a specialist. Obviously, Freeman's a specialist. So you have some matchup stuff to play with here. And, you know, the manager is something that we're going to leave off for now in terms of just deployment. But I don't know. This bullpen could make you comfortable or it can make you terrified. And we saw last year it was terrifying for a while. I think it's overblown a little bit. But if you're asking me if this is going to be a good bullpen this year, they better be healthy. Because if they're not healthy, especially at the end, if O'Day, Minter, and Vizcaíno are not solid and healthy, it might be an adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you go back to not being healthy, and that's obviously the key here. But just for a minute, we don't want to turn this into the Craig Kimbrel podcast, but if they would add Craig, think about how, you know, everyone kind of slots down a spot, right? And all of a sudden, instead of trying to figure out who's going to close games, you're figuring out who's going to, you know, how you're going to just get to the 6th or 7th inning, and then you can throw Minter and Viz and O'Day and Venters as a specialist and Biddle and all those types. Again, I have no idea where Craig is going to end up with, but it's pretty obvious how much better he would make this bullpen. I think it would make you and I feel a lot more certain about the later innings, especially with a young pitching staff for the most part that might not always go super deep into games. You know they're going to get called on a lot. So yeah, it's a shame. Maybe the price will eventually come down, and who knows what Kimbrel's still looking for at this point in the winter, but or spring. It's not even winter anymore. But it would have everybody breathe a little bit easier if they are able to add him.
Yeah, it kind of goes without saying almost, but yeah, I totally agree. It's he would change a lot of things because if you're penciling that guy in the 9th, suddenly your 7th, 8th inning guys look a lot better. it's just one of those things
absolutely.
Where
absolutely, yeah. I mean, magically, if Minter's coming in the 7th inning of games for the Braves, yeah. I mean, you can do a whole lot worse.
Right. So, and I do think that I'm glad you brought this up earlier, but I think the Braves do have a number of X-Factor type hybrid guys. Like, you know, if Tukey's not in the rotation to start the season, if he's in the bullpen, he's someone who could be just devastating in the bullpen, for instance. And with the way that Kyle Wright looked this week, he got a lot of buzz as a starter potential guy. They're going to mix and match a lot, and it's not going to be the firm roles that people are necessarily used to. I don't think you're going to see five starters with 160 innings or more. It's just not going to happen on this team. They're going to definitely play matchups. You saw Julio Teheran, et cetera, and the starters that kind of free up some innings. But you're going to see at some point this season Freed or Tukey or somebody else in the bullpen for a while. May not be the whole season, but I'd be stunned if you didn't see a starter or two spend some real time there. Just because they're trying to win game. And this is a big year. I mean, for the first time in a long time, the Braves have expectations to make the playoffs. They think they're going to make the playoffs. They think they're going to repeat as NL East champions. And if you think that going in, you kind of have to pull out all the stops to some degree. Not crazily, but you can't just be like, nope, we're gonna hold that guy back because we're not. It's like, no, it's time to put the pedal down to the floor, and that means using your best guys when they're available.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, you talked about guys not throwing, everyone throwing 160 innings, and that's just kind of the way of baseball now. I mean, I saw a crazy stat the other day. Other than Kershaw, a single Dodgers pitcher has not thrown more than 160 innings in the last 5 years.
I mean, they're like comical in the fact that they have like 10 starters every year. Like, I'm not exaggerating. They just, like, they have guys who would be number two starters on some teams that are like their seventh starter. Like, I'm thinking of Kenta Maeda, who like throws like 120 innings and he's awesome every year. But it's like, nope, they're going to have him be like the seventh guy. It's like, what are we doing?
And I think honestly, and while they aren't as long in the tooth as the Dodgers are, I mean, you think about the Braves' logjam of starters right now, and you have, you know, assuming everyone's healthy, of course, you have Folty, you have Gausman, you have Newcomb, you have Teheran. Those guys are locked in. Tukey is pretty clearly, if not major league ready, is knocking right at the door. If Soroka's shoulder can get right, he's ready. Kyle Wright, at least in my opinion, is the best pitching prospect on the team right now. He's major league ready. You have Luis Gohara, if he can get right. You have Max Fried. You have Bryce Wilson, who was impressive last year. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is if you have, you know, if you have 10 guys who make starts this year for the Braves, it shouldn't necessarily be because they don't have any better options. It's just because they're going to spread out their innings and they don't want anyone throwing 180, 200 innings, especially, as you said, if they have playoff aspirations, you want guys to be fresh in October instead of on their, you know, running on empty.
Yeah, and that, you know, it all kind of feeds into itself. You know, doing a bullpen preview, we're focusing on the guys who are going to be in the bullpen, but, you know, could be very different throughout the season. So we will keep an eye on all of that, obviously. And if things change even between now and opening day, we'll come back to the bullpen. I have no problem going back to it, but I wanted to sort of kick off our preview-ish series with the bullpen. And that's probably a good thing to end it on, I suppose, unless you have something else that you want to say, because we could go deep dives on Jesse Biddle and Sam Freeman, but I think people know what they are for the most part. I mean, the guys who we know are good, let's just, when they're healthy, these guys are good. Vizcaino, Minter, O'Day, and I think Venters is good in his role. Those four guys we know are good. And we've seen Winkler be good as well for a while. He got banged up a little bit last year, but those four or five guys we know are good. Everybody else is a little bit less exciting. Biddle, I do like Biddle. I should say, I feel like I've crapped on Biddle. I do kind of like Jesse Biddle, but just in like a way where I want him to be the seventh guy in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think that's fair. In kind of a hybrid role. He's never going to be fine. A long. Yeah, you probably don't want him as your long man because he's just not really built for that, but he was good last year. Again, it's kind of easy to forget just that there were some really impressive first half performances, but of course when guys are so bad in the second half they don't even make the playoff roster like Biddle, that, you know, it's easy to kind of forget just how good they were at times during the first 3 or 4 months of the year.
Yep, that definitely goes for Winkler as well, who was not so good late, but it was awesome early on. All right, Scott, we've done enough, I think. We're 45 minutes in or so. Anything you want to plug and get out there, or any thoughts that you have to sign off with? Because I know we haven't talked, well, you and I have talked, but not in this forum in a couple weeks. So please share anything you'd like to, including about Arizona basketball.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, go down that rabbit hole with the FBI. No, I mean, nothing too much. I mean, you know, we've touched on all the 3 weeks to opening day is certainly exciting. I think it's interesting, and it's almost, to me, it's a shame that the off season went the way it did, because it really did kind of dampen the excitement and hope this spring. You're talking about a team that won 90 games last year and won the division surprisingly. And last year was such a fun year. I mean, doing these podcasts every week, we had fun stuff to talk about. Especially compared to the 3 or 4 years before that, which is how miserable some of those rebuilding years were. And again, I know me personally, I'm getting excited for games. Even if this spring has been a little turbulent with all the injuries, thankfully it's nothing major, you know, knock on wood, but exciting nonetheless. And it should be a really good competitive division, good competitive National League East, National League as a whole, I should say. Basically every team other than the Marlins and I guess the Giants and Diamondbacks, maybe, though they didn't fully gut themselves. Everybody else is trying to win this year, which is pretty crazy compared to the American League, where you have like five or six teams really competing and everybody else is kind of in the dumps. So it's going to be competitive just about every night. You're going to be seeing, if not a good team, a decent one, a team that's going to push to be 500 and should make for a fun season.
Certainly, and we will have plenty more between now and opening day, including something's going to happen. I don't know what's going to be, whether they sign another veteran arm or do something or just do nothing. Regardless, we're going to be weighing in between now and opening day. As a programming note, at some point, we're going to get back to the normal Sunday schedule. I know I've been sort of all over the place the last few weeks as a result of just weirdness with spring training, all that fun stuff. But rest assured, the normal recording schedule on this podcast, once the season starts, we'll be Sunday nights in our normal typical spot. It's kind of the easiest one for me in general. So that's where we'll be for the most part. Every once in a while, we'll have to be creative to get around that, but that'll be where you will find us. Please subscribe. If you have missed this in the last couple of weeks, we are now on Megaphone as our hosting platform, which shouldn't really affect anybody other than the fact that if you have subscribed to the podcast, it would be very easy for you to get the show in your feed, wherever that is, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you like to listen to podcasts, we should still be there. If you like to listen to the podcast on talkingchop.com, you can still do that. Every single post, every single podcast, I should say, will have a separate post on talkingchop.com. So if you like to listen to it there, by all means, go ahead and do that. But please subscribe, leave 5-star feedback. Please follow Scott, follow the pod at our normal Talking Chop Twitter page. No separate one for the podcast, but please follow us there. And we'll be back again next week.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.